I'd like to welcome everyone to the assembly this afternoon. Got several of you out and traveling, but certainly pleased with everyone that was able to make it out tonight. It's been several, I don't know, maybe a year ago, months, I can't remember. It all kind of runs together for me, but Mike had sent me an email, said you need to do a lesson on this. This will make a good idea. It's a verse that's found in the book of Jeremiah. And it's got kind of a neat little image that goes with it. And then I came across it two other times. One is in Carl Johnson's book, so if anyone got the book that he had with him last time, there's a story in here about running with the horses. That's what he calls it. And I also came across something from Joe Norton up in Arlington congregation and written something about it. But there is a passage in the scriptures in Jeremiah, the 12th chapter. It's kind of neat. In the New King James Version, it renders it contend with horses. And that's kind of a metaphorical term. There's actually two little metaphorical statements that Jeremiah is told by God. And one of them is called contend with horses. And so that's what I'll talk about tonight for a little while. I hope this will be kind of an encouraging lesson because it deals with something that we all have to face. And that's tragedy. And it's terrible. And it's bad things. And Jeremiah was no different than we are. And he kind of had to go through the same process of understanding why all this bad stuff was happening to him and why he could look out here and see somebody living a terrible, horrible life, yet it seemed that they were blessed by God. And I suppose we've all been envious of that at one time or another, thinking we're trying so hard and we don't have anything, and here's somebody living a terrible life, but yet they seem to have everything going for them. And that's what Jeremiah had to deal with. But the passage comes from Jeremiah, the 12th chapter, verse 5. Jeremiah chapter 12, verse 5. Jeremiah is trying to come to grips with why all this bad stuff is happening to him. And God gives him this reply. He says, if you have run with the footmen, and they have wearied you, then how can you contend with horses? And if in the land of peace, in which you trusted, they wearied you, then how will you do in the floodplain of the Jordan? And so there's two kind of metaphorical examples that God gives to Jeremiah. One is this idea, if you're running with the footmen, and they made you tired, how are you going to contend with the horses? And the second thing he says is, if you've been in the land of peace, if you've been in the land of peace and you've gotten tired, how are you going to deal in the footplains of the Jordan? So at first it may seem a little bit confusing, but hopefully we can kind of work our way through this, because there's a real good message to it here. God is trying to straighten out Jeremiah's thinking a little bit. Jeremiah had kind of fallen into the woe is me mentality that pretty much everyone goes into at one time or another. So we're going to talk about this concept of contending with the horses. But before we go further, let's go to God and work with him. I remember when I started my first coaching job, that had been back in 1996, right out of college. Had a person tell me, he says, there's only two types of coaches in the world. He says, those that have been fired and those that will be fired. And he said, that's just kind of the way it is in the profession. And you look across, you know, if you keep up with the NFL or anything, that's just kind of the way it is. You either will be or you have been fired. And so I'm going to kind of ask this question in the same way. Have you ever been discouraged? Have you ever been depressed? Have you ever been down about something because of the way things are going? And I'm going to tell you, there's only two types of people in the world, those that have been discouraged and those that will be discouraged. It's just a matter of time because it's something that we all have to face. We all have to face difficult times. We always have to face problems and issues. And it's just not always going to be a rosy ride. It's not always going to be rainbows and puppy dogs and a smooth sailing. We're all going to have to go through difficult times. We're going to have to go through the loss of loved ones. We're going to have to go through situations where maybe our job doesn't work out. We're going to have to go through situations where relationships don't work out. And it's tough. And Jeremiah was no different than us. Jeremiah had problems. One thing that Jeremiah had to deal with, he had been working with a king by the name of Josiah. You may remember the king Josiah. If you were to make a list of all the kings that ruled over Judah and Israel after the time of Solomon, most of them were about as sorry as they come. They were unrighteous, evil people. Well, Josiah was on the other side. Josiah is one of the few that was counted as righteous. Josiah was the one, remember, he did a great building project there in Jerusalem, had to clean up the temple, and also they found the book. They, back there in the corner somewhere, they found the scroll that contained the Word of God, and Josiah was just overcome when he started reading it. I mean, we're supposed to be doing this and that, and we're not supposed to be doing it. He was just amazed. And so he went through some great reformation there in Judah and in Jerusalem to make sure that they were worshiping God correctly. And he got rid of all the idols, and he got rid of all the problems, and then he got killed in battle. Okay? And once he got killed in battle, unfortunately, the nation pretty much reverted right back to where they had come from. And so now Jeremiah has seen this. He's seen this great progress going on, and now all of a sudden, here we are right back to where we started. The idols are being put back up. High places are being reestablished. And Jeremiah's very upset about it. Add to the fact, the Babylonian Empire was just waiting. They were licking their chops right outside the door. And Jeremiah knew what was about to happen. He knew that this great empire coming in, he knew what was about to happen. That Judah was about to be destroyed. That Jerusalem was about to be overrun. And as a prophet, he probably had a little bit more understanding than most. So he's got that weighing in on his mind. And he knows what's going on in the times around him. Add to it, the nation of Judah was also under a terrible drought. And so there wasn't anything to eat. People were starving. Things were getting very desolate and terrible around the homeland. And Jeremiah's having to deal with this. Add to it, his hometown. The folks that he had grew up with here at Anathoth had turned against him. And in fact, they said, "We're sick and tired of you prophesying unto us." And they basically put a bounty out on his head that he was going to get killed next time he stepped foot in his hometown. And so Jeremiah is going to completely and totally alone. Jeremiah 11 and 12 says, "Therefore thus says the Lord concerning the men of Anathoth who seek your life, saying, do not prophesy on the name of the Lord, lest ye die by our hand." So they make a statement, Jeremiah, "We don't want you prophesying, we don't want you around here." And they are out to get Jeremiah the prophet. Because Jeremiah has been speaking this, he's been speaking the truth. And unfortunately, people just don't want to hear it. So Jeremiah, he's in a low, low spot right now. Jeremiah, you remember a lot of times they called him the weeping prophet? Because man, he's having to go through some really, really tough times. And unfortunately, nobody's listening to him. At least that's what he feels like. And he's about to have enough. And so in chapter 12, verse 1, Jeremiah kind of questions God. And he takes all this frustration, all that he's dealing with, and he turns it back onto God. And he asks a question that I suppose many of us have asked as well sometime in our life. And if we haven't, I bet one of the things we do. In Jeremiah 12 and 1, he says, "Righteous are you, O Lord, when I plead with you. Yet let me talk with you about your judgments. Why does the way of the wicked prosper? And why are those happy who deal so treacherously?" Have you ever wondered that in your mind? Why do the wicked prosper? Why is it that there are people out there that you know are just as sorry as can be? They cheat, they steal, they lie, they're unethical, they have no scruples, and every time they turn around, it seems like they get promoted or something else good happens to them. And you're thinking, well, what's the use of all that? How come I'm trying to live a good life and do what I'm supposed to? And I'm not getting all these accolades. I'm not getting any awards. I'm not getting anything out of it. And that's a very, very dangerous position to be in when we start questioning. Can you imagine Jeremiah? I mean, I know he's a prophet and all, but could you imagine saying that to God? He says, "God, I'd like to sit down and have a talk with you about your judgments." And I can't even imagine staying up to the Almighty God and saying, Let's have a conversation about your judgments. We need to talk about, you know, some of the decisions that you have made. I can't imagine even doing that. But Jeremiah, I've got to give him credit. He's had enough. He's had a tough time, and he's basically had enough. So the question is then asked, why do the wicked prosper? Why are people who are living wrong, why do they seem to be getting all the awards? Why are they doing so well? Put it short, that ain't fair. That's not fair. Life's not fair. Why am I working so hard for peanuts and these wicked people, they're prospering. Everything seems to be going their way. How come life isn't fair? And if you've never said that before or thought that in your mind, chances are you probably will, because I think that's something that we all go through as we try to do what's right. God gave her a quick response. Why do the wicked prosper? Because. Because I said so. Because that's the way it's going to be. Now, Jeremiah, you sit down and be quiet and do what I tell you to do. And that was basically the response that he got. Because what God did, he very, very quickly turned everything right back on Jeremiah. He turned the entire conversation, not about the wicked and not about what God had done. He turned the entire conversation and the spotlight fell right on Jeremiah. And he said, Jeremiah, we need to talk. We need to get your mind straight. And that's where he gets to Jeremiah 12 and 5. This is God's response to Jeremiah's question, why do the wicked prosper? This is what he said. He says, Jeremiah, if you have run with the footmen and they have wearied you, then how can you contend with horses? So I want you to think about this metaphorical answer here that he's giving. If you're getting tired fighting against the infantry, how are you going to handle the cavalry? So get the picture and the image in your mind. If you're tired with what's going on right now, what are you going to do when it gets worse? When the real people come to town, when the cavalry comes to town, how are you going to handle those horses? How are you going to run with the horses if you can't run with a man? You know, there's several examples of these professional athletes. They like to get out and make these great claims that they can race a horse. Jim Thorpe did it about 100 years ago. More recently, there was a guy by the name of Chris Collinsworth. You may have heard of him. He's the announcer on the Sunday night football games. There's another old boy, I would never go fond of him. He plays football up in Cincinnati. He's a very vain guy. His name was Chad Johnson. You may remember that name if you're a football fan. He was so vain. He was number 85 for the Cincinnati Bengals. He legally had his name changed to Ocho Cinco for 8-5, which was his football jersey. He's a crazy old guy. But he came up and said he's going to race a horse. And he did. He got a little bit of a head start and he beat the horse. So that's kind of crazy. And donated all the money to charity. So I'll give him some credit for that. But this idea of racing horses, I don't think there's too many people that want to go out and race horses. And that's what the point is that God is making to Jeremiah. He says, if you're just doing this with just the people that are walking and you're tired and you're already ready to give up and you want to start questioning what I'm saying because you're having to deal with the infantry, then what are you going to do when the cavalry comes and you have to contend with horses? You have to run with the horses. So that was the first metaphorical answer that God gave. The second one, he says, and if in the land of peace in which you trusted they wearied you, then how will you do in the floodplain of the Jordan? Now this one's a little bit trickier to understand. So I underlined that phrase, floodplain of the Jordan. So it depends what translation you have. Because there's some different words that people weren't really sure how to translate that. So the floodplain of the Jordan, or the Jordan River comes down throughout the Holy Lands. We're always talking about the Jordan as it goes from the Sea of Galilee straight down south to the Dead Sea. It would flood all the time. And so the floodplain of the Jordan would be that land on either side of the river that was continually being flooded, and it had great vegetation. In fact, you might even say it had quite an undergrowth on either side of the river. And so, depending on the translation that you have, some call it the swelling of the Jordan, where the Jordan would overflow its banks every year. The word thicket is also used several times in some translations, the thicket of the Jordan. And the one that I like the best, because I think this is where he's going to, some translations even say the jungle of the Jordan. So think about right outside of the river where it always flooded, you got the jungle of the Jordan. And there's another really neat little passage in Jeremiah. Jeremiah 49 and 19. He says, behold, he shall come up like a lion from the floodplain of the Jordan against the dwelling place of the strong. And so there seems to be some evidence that this area right outside the Jordan River back in those times, it was basically a jungle, very dense, heavy undergrowth. And that's where the lions roamed around. So there's two other references in the book of Jeremiah to these lions coming up from the floodplain of the Jordan, or the jungle of the Jordan. So now you kind of see what he's saying. He says, if you can't walk out in the open without getting tired, then how are you going to survive the jungle where there's lions and there's undergrowth and there's wild animals and wild beasts? If you can't make it out in the open of Anathoth, where you're out there in nice, you know, nice flat lands, If you can't make it out there without getting tired and worn out, how in the world are you going to survive the jungle when you're getting chased by lions? And so you see kind of the concept of how God is answering Jeremiah. Jeremiah was all worried about God. God, we need to talk about your judgments. We need to talk about the decisions that you've been making. And I want to know how come the wicked prosper. And God said, I don't think so. That's not how this conversation is going to go. He turned everything back on Jeremiah. He said, Jeremiah, if you can't run with the foot soldiers, how in the world do you expect to run with the horses? If you can't make it out here on the plains of Anathoth, where it's nice open space and it's your hometown, if you can't make it there, how in the world are you going to survive the jungle being chased by lions? And so there's kind of some beauty to the response that he's making here. So what's he talking about? What's the meaning of those metaphors? And God's saying, no matter how difficult Jeremiah thought his life currently was, and it was bad, don't get me wrong, but no matter how bad Jeremiah thought it was, as the old expression goes, he ain't seen nothing yet. He says, this is just a taste of what's going to happen. And if you can't handle the footmen, then you're not going to be able to handle what's going to happen when the cavalry gets here, when the horses get here. If you can't handle what's going on in Anathoth, there's no way you're going to handle the jungle that you're about to find yourself in. Because as bad as things were, they were about to get worse. And so Jeremiah kind of had to get his mind straight to quit worrying about what God was doing. You know, he didn't have any control over that. Jeremiah needed to worry about himself. Jeremiah needed to worry about his own mind and his own thoughts and his own attitude and let God take care of everything else. And Jeremiah didn't get to get his mind straight because this is about to get really rough on him. We're about to have the fall of Jerusalem. Boy, lots of people died. Lots of innocent people died. I got to the point where the starvation in the city was so bad, people turned to cannibalism just to survive. It was terrible. The destruction of God's temple there in the city of Jerusalem, desecrated, destroyed, wiped out. Anything of value just stolen and carried back to Babylon. It was terrible. The Babylonian captivity was just around the corner, some 70 years where they were taken away from their homeland and sent back to Babylon. See, things weren't going to be good. And so Jeremiah, as bad as you think things are now, it's only a taste of what's going to happen. And you've got to be strong. He's telling them, you have got to be able to handle this if you're going to be my servant. So I came up here with a couple of lessons from Jeremiah. So I've got three of them here on our lessons we consider. It's number one. Bad times are a part of life, but we cannot allow them to interfere with our duty to serve God. And that just sounds easy to say, but there's going to come a point in time, I suppose, where everybody already has or will, they're going to get down on their faith. They're going to get discouraged about the way things are going, and you got to ask yourself your question, is this worth it? Is it really worth it to try to live this Christian life? Is it really worth it to try to be, you know, to be part of the church? Is it worth it? Or, man, it should be a lot easier just to stay home and sleep. It would be a lot easier to do something else that I wanted to do. The question is, can you overcome it? Bad times are a part of life, but we cannot allow them to interfere with our duty to serve God. And I'm going to give you two extremely harsh examples. Okay, the first one comes from the book of Leviticus. I do not have these on the slide. So if you want to follow along, I'm turning back to Leviticus, the 10th chapter. Leviticus, the 10th chapter. This tells a story about Aaron's sons. Remember Nadab and Abihu? We talk a lot about the first part of the story. Nadab and Abihu, it says that they took their censer, they put some type of strange fire, whatever that means. Maybe they didn't get the fire from the right altar. I don't know what it means exactly. It just says they took strange fire, which the Lord had not commanded them. So I don't know what the whole situation was. But these sons of the priest had gone in and they had done something illegally there in worship, and fire went out from heaven and killed them. And Nadab and Abihu were killed. In Leviticus 10 and 2 it says, so fire went out from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. And so we talk a lot about Nadab and Abihu being killed for their transgression. But have you ever read the rest of the story about how God dealt with Aaron? Remember, this is Aaron's kids. It's his sons. These are the nephews of Moses. I mean, this is a family situation. It is a family tragedy. And in verse 6, here's what what Moses says. He says, and Moses said to Aaron, and Eleazar and Ithamar, his sons. So these are the two remaining sons who were not killed. Do not uncover your heads nor tear your clothes, lest you die. And wrath come upon all the people. But let your brethren, the whole house of Israel, bewail the burning which the Lord has kindled. You understand what he's saying? He told Aaron and he told the two surviving brothers, he says, you can't mourn. He said, don't put on cloth like the mourning cloth. Don't put on the sackcloth. Don't cover your head. Don't tear your clothes. That's the things they did back in those days to show that they were grieving. He said, don't do it. He says, you have to maintain. You're Aaron. You're the priest. You cannot grieve for the death of your sons. You have to do your job. Can you imagine that? It says in verse 7, you shall not go out from the door of the tabernacle of meeting, lest you die. For the anointing oil of the Lord is upon you. See, they had to do their job first. They had to do their job as far as being the priest and taking care of the altar and the sacrifices. That was their job. They were not allowed to grieve. And it says, and they did according to the word of Moses. Isn't that rough? You talk about a family tragedy. Moses or Aaron had to watch his two sons killed right there on the floor. And there wasn't a thing he could do about it. He wasn't allowed to grieve for them. The brothers weren't allowed to carry them out and give them a proper burial. They were not allowed to do that because their service to God had to come first in this terrible tragedy. They could not allow this tragedy to get in the way of serving God. Now, I know that's a harsh example, but that is exactly what happened in Leviticus chapter 10. Let me give you a second one. In Ezekiel chapter 24, and again, this is not on the slide either, so I'm going to turn it to Ezekiel chapter 24. Now, we know Ezekiel is one of the great prophets. Again, he's another one that has some rough times going on, and he was called upon to be an example to the people, and something happens here. This is heartbreaking. This is just downright heartbreaking. In Ezekiel chapter 24, the word of God comes to Ezekiel and says, Ezekiel, this is in verse 15, he says, Son of man, behold, I take away from you the desire of your eyes with one stroke. And he's talking about his wife. He said, your wife is going to die. The desire of your eyes, your wife is going to die. And he continues, he says, yet you shall neither mourn nor weep, nor shall your tears run down. Sigh in silence, make no mourning for the dead. Bind your turban on your head and put your sandals on your feet. Do not cover your lips and do not eat man's bread of sorrow. He says, your wife, the desire of your eyes, is going to be taken away like that. Don't mourn. Because your job is to be the prophet. You cannot mourn. You can't do it. And verse 18 says, so I spoke to the people in the morning, and at evening my wife died. And the next morning I did as I was commanded. So he got up and went back to work. Isn't that a heartbreaking story? That he was not even allowed to mourn for the death of his wife. Now, I don't want to say that, you know, God is this harsh. I think we're allowed to mourn. I don't want to say that. But I do know that Aaron and Ezekiel were counted upon to do their jobs first. They were counted upon to do their duty to God first. But isn't that harsh? I mean, that's a tough one to get through. But I think the idea is, we cannot let personal tragedy interfere with our service to God. And that sure is easy to say and very, very difficult to do. I can only imagine what Ezekiel was going through. But he had to do what God told him to do first. Neither was allowed to show grief. Neither was allowed to show emotion. Since there was a greater responsibility at hand, Aaron and Ezekiel had a much higher call. Number two, Christianity is not for frontrunners. You may not be too familiar with that word front runner. That's something we use in athletics all the time. If you're from Big Spring, I apologize. But we just got done playing Big Spring this last weekend with all of our junior high all the way up to our high school teams. And I told my little seventh graders, I said, listen, I've played Big Spring in football since I was in school. And I'm going to tell you the way Big Spring is. They're going to be bigger than you. They're going to be faster than you. They're going to be taller than you. And if you will score a couple of touchdowns early on, they will completely quit. And that's exactly what happened. I don't know what it is about Big Spring. If you are a Big Spring fan, I apologize. But But if you could ever jump on Big Spring, I don't care how big they are, you'll beat them by 50 points. It's amazing. But if you don't, if you let them hang around, they're front runners. Front runners are people that play real well when they're ahead. When they get out of the lead, they play real, real well. But if you ever get on them, they just shut down and quit. It's amazing. In that little seventh grade game, I think after we had played for about 3 minutes, we were ahead 21-0. They, boom, 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 we scored, and that game was over before you even got started. Drew's team, I think it was 28-0 in the first quarter. It was over. Now, we had one team, a little eighth grade team. We made a couple of dumb plays, and all of a sudden they got fired up, and it was a battle till the very end. Because once they get going, you can't stop them. So, Christianity is not for front runners. It's not just for the good times. It's not just when things are going well. Christianity is, you got to fight through it. It is about surviving, and it's about maintaining through the good times and the bad times of life. Matthew 13, remember the parable of the sower? And it talks about the different types of ground that the seed would hit. I'm afraid we see this a lot of time with new converts. They get very, very excited until bad things happen. They think maybe that Christianity is really going to change their life and it's going to insulate them from anything bad that could happen. That's not the case. In Matthew 13, Jesus is explaining his own parable. He says, "But he who received the seed on stony places, this is he who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet he has no root in himself, but endures only for a while. For when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he stumbles." So when something bad happens, automatically, it's like they can't handle it. And doesn't that sound like Jeremiah? Listen, if you can't walk around the plains of Anathoth, what's going to happen when the lions from the jungle of the Jordan come after you? And I think that's what happens. If you're on the stony ground, you have trouble handling the difficult situation. Matthew 5, verse 11, part of the Sermon on the Mount. "Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." There will be persecution. There will be tough times. People are going to attack us for the things that we believe. People are going to attack us for the way that we live. Not only that, just bad things in general are going to happen to us. Just the way it is. But great is the reward in heaven if we can survive it. But we can't let the little things distract us and kick us off the path. We can't let the running with the infantry be so devastating and tiring to us, because eventually the horses are going to come and you're going to have to kick it up a notch. And we're going to have to go to a new level to be able to survive. Number three, finally. God would not call upon us to contend with horses without first training us against foot. I think that's important. I think it's important to understand that there's a process to everything. When bad things happen, there's a process of how to understand it. There's a difference between a new Christian and a mature Christian. Not in the bad things that happen. It can happen to anybody, but it's in the way that we respond and in the way that we look at things. We have to be able to understand that there's a process. I mentioned Ezekiel and I mentioned Aaron. Those were some men that had been through some trials. And so when they had these difficult tasks placed before them, at least they were mature. At least they had gone through some of the battles and they'd been trained and they were able to handle it. I don't think God's going to expect us sometimes to, we lose our spouse, we lose our children, to just go through like it never happened. I don't think that's what God expects at all. I think God expects us to mourn. I think he's a very loving God. But we need to be able to handle things like that and not allow that to ruin our service to God. I believe we're going to be trained as first. There's a process. Romans 5 and 3. This is one of two passages I automatically thought of that really talk about the process. Romans 5 and 3. "And not only that, but we also glory in tribulations, knowing that tribulations produces perseverance, and perseverance character, and character hope." That word perseverance in a lot of translations is rendered endurance. That you just got to keep going. You got to get through it. And so tribulations teach us perseverance. They teach us how to endure. And so if bad things happen, you got to keep fighting. You got to keep fighting. You got to get through it. You got to go on. No matter how hard it is, no matter how tough it is, bad things happen, you got to keep fighting. You got to have endurance. You have to persevere. Once you persevere, that's what builds your character. And once you have a good, solid Christian character, then we can start talking about a hope of something better. But see, it's a process. It's not something that happens overnight. It's not something that I don't think we're born with it. It's not an innate sense and instinct. It's something we have to learn, we have to practice, and we have to go through it. Kind of like that old expression, whatever doesn't kill you only makes you stronger. We have to be able to go through it. You have to keep fighting. The tribulations produce endurance, and endurance produces character. Character produces hope. The other verse I thought of comes from James. James, the first chapter, kind of the same concept here. James says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect worth, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. So again, there's a process. It starts with the trials. The trials are going to test our faith. Testing of our faith is going to make us patient. And when we learn how to have patience, we can be perfect and we can be complete. I heard it said one time, maybe in Peggy, now that I think about it, said you've got to be careful praying for patience. There's only one way that you can learn how to be a patient person. And that means you're going to have a lot of trials and you're going to have a lot of problems. That's the only way to learn how to be patient and how to fight through it. But there's a process involved. And I don't think God's going to send us out of the jungles against the lions if we haven't first gotten our feet wet learning and how to handle situations like this. I don't think God's going to send us out against the cavalry if we first have not been trained to fight against the footmen. And that's what he's telling Jeremiah. He says, listen, bad things are going to happen. You've already been through so much. You've already been trained so well. Don't let this little thing throw you off path. If you can't handle running with the footmen, there's no way you're going to be able to handle with the horses. He said, Jeremiah, you're going to have to step up your game. You're going to have to be ready to go because bad things are coming. So let me conclude. If we allow the relatively small things in life to discourage us, how can we expect to handle the really tough issues? And the answer is, we can't. We have got to be able to handle the small problems, and the small problems will help us in our understanding to take care of the bigger issues. When Brother Carl Johnson was here, gave our meeting, he had that book for such a time as this. I don't know if any of y'all got it. Look on page 10. Page 10 of his book, one of the back page articles, he entitled it Running with Horses. And I want to close with this passage here. I thought this is pretty good. He says, there is a lot I do not understand about life, but I absolutely cannot understand how people in trouble, loss, and bereavement can peevishly turn away from God. After all, have we not lost enough without losing Him too? I think that's a pretty good way of saying it. We can't turn away from God just because something bad happens, because something negative happens. Because if we lose God, we lost everything. We've lost something eternal, not just something here upon this earth. And I think that's the message that God was trying to get through Jeremiah. I know things are bad. I know you're having a rough time. But don't let a small problem, don't let that discourage you. Because if a small problem discourages you, you have no chance when the big issues come. I like those two metaphors. See if you can remember them. Contending with the horses. If you can't run at the footmen, how are you going to contend with the horses? And if you can't stand the open plains of Anathoth, how in the world are you going to handle the jungles of Jordan? So I thought that was a pretty good little lesson. We'd never like to close, though, without having a song of invitation.